One thing that you might want to know as well is that Dr. Nathanson is not a Christian. And if it's possible to praise God that someone is not a Christian, I'm just deeply thankful that here is a man who does not profess Christ but who still sees the atrocity of abortion. And it lends credibility to the fact that this is not a church-state issue. This is a human issue as well. The reason we called this, we invited people here this evening to see the movie, but also to somehow work towards moving from a verbal stage to an action stage. It is, all of us pretty much have our pro-life convictions already, but it's frustrating sometimes to know how to make the transition from saying something about abortion to doing something about abortion. So what we will be doing in the next few minutes is looking at some means whereby, as people in Christian congregations, we can address the issue of abortion in the pulpit, how to deal with that pastorally, but effectively, how to, and share some ideas for, in congregational life, what we can be doing, what programs, ideas we can be sharing, and also in the community, what we can be doing to start effecting change. So we have with us tonight to address the issue of how to deal with abortion from the pulpit and also sharing some ideas in the congregation, Pastor Tim Dorsch, who's from Pinckneyville, Illinois, and has been involved in the pro-life movement for about 8 years. Before he speaks, however, why don't we just stand up for just a moment and take a stretch and then sit back down, because we do have some materials that we'd like to cover. And then take just a minute, and then he'll come up and share some things with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you to share some ideas with you about how a pastor can be effective both in the pulpit and the congregation, perhaps also a little bit in the community also. Those of you who have been out on vicarage know, of course, that once you graduate from the seminary, you have wisdom and knowledge and no problems at all in conveying your beliefs and putting programs into practice. But realistically, you have to expect that even though we as a Missouri Synod have a very strong pro-life stance, and though we have probably the best resolutions on the books in our conventions, all of those convictions have not filtered down or come down to the average layman. Many of them do have a strong pro-life belief, but unfortunately not all. And so there's a great deal of education that needs to be done. And in my own congregation, I still have some people who scowl at the thought and at the mention of a pro-life issue. In later society, they've expressed that they don't see what business the church has being involved in such a matter. And so there's the ongoing struggle and the ongoing educational process that needs to take place. I first began to get involved in the pro-life movement shortly after I came to Pinckneyville, a little over 8 years ago. I had gotten involved in a community service by becoming a part of the volunteer ambulance service. And I'd been on it about 3 or 4 months when our ambulance, which also has a unit stationed at a neighboring town, had a call to a home, unknown type of problem, except that the woman was hemorrhaging. Well, as it turned out, the young lady had had a safe and legal abortion earlier that day, and when the ambulance arrived, her heart had just quit beating. She had bled so much from it that irreversible shock had set in, and by the time they arrived at the hospital, she was indeed dead, and no effort could change that. I attended the inquest hoping that this would be an opportunity for the abortionist to be brought to trial, perhaps. But with the elderly men that had been selected as the coroner's jury, and who didn't really seem to have a good grasp of the medical implications of everything that was discussed, nothing really came of it. But it did make a big impact in the community and in some of my thinking. And so as I became more involved with the facts and learned more about what an abortion is, I became truly convinced that abortion not only is theologically wrong, but also morally wrong and physically wrong, and wrong from a civil rights aspect as well. Whenever you're debating with or discussing the issue of abortion with someone, there are any number of areas in which you can approach them. If one doesn't work, another one will. Because I know of no excuse that any woman or anyone can have to allow or justify an abortion. And one thing in our advantage is that most women, most people, deep down inside, know that it's wrong. God has given us a conscience, and we know that it is a wrongful act. But very often there are so many excuses that society gives, so many excuses that the pro-abortionists give, so many excuses that what are sometimes called feminists give, that we tend to almost accept them in unusual circumstances. As you look through the various pericopes, it's amazing how many times a pro-life attitude can be gained from them. They don't jump out at you right away immediately, but as you begin to have that sort of mind frame and mindset, you'll notice a number of texts which very clearly point out that God is indeed a God of both life and death. He gives life to us, and it is He alone who has the right to take it, and it shows clearly that He is very much pro-life. You simply need to be alert to them. In other words, pick not just one Sunday a year to mention the issues of pro-life, because there are any number of areas of pro-life that you can discuss and preach about on that Sunday. Remembering, too, that pro-life includes not just abortion, but also infanticide, especially in infants that are not perfect, and also then leading up to euthanasia in its various stages. It's been pointed out that it's like a domino effect. First, abortion, and then infanticide, allowing the imperfect child to die, sometimes causing it to die, used to be unheard of, but now it is becoming more and more common. And then there is euthanasia. So all of these are pro-life issues. The sheet that you've been given tonight has a number of Bible passages on them which are very good in bringing before us the issues of life and death. We need to be like Martin Luther as he took a stand in the matters of sin and grace. We need to take a stand in those matters and in the matters of life and death. As was pointed out before, we also need to follow through in making alternatives available. As Christians, we need not only to say that it is wrong, but we need to provide ways for those who become convinced that it is wrong that they might have a viable alternative. What often happens when a woman chooses abortion is that it's a very sudden, quick decision. She feels pressured. She needs to do it right away. She doesn't know where to turn. She doesn't know what the alternatives are. All she can think of is her present problem and the anticipated relief that is supposed to follow a safe, legal abortion. In addition to the physical complications with which Dr. Nathanson mentioned, there are also the emotional complications and psychological complications. As I said before, women know that it's wrong, but under the pressure of the situation, they can be convinced that it is okay this time. And so, as in addition to our preaching that an alternative needs to be there, and in addition to sharing that it is wrong, we also need to keep the door open for that woman who has had an abortion in order that God's grace and God's forgiveness and God's love may be applied to her also. Very often when a woman is finally confronted with the facts, one who has had an abortion will experience great remorse. Some become hysterical when they realize what has happened. It's not simply just a blob of tissue, which they're often told in the so-called abortion counseling, which is very much a one-sided sales pitch. If indeed both sides of the issue were told, very few women would be able to say, yes, I want that to happen to my baby. One thing you can mention in your preaching is how the language of today has been changed to coincide with the pro-abortion stance. They are no longer called children or babies. They are called a fetus or a piece of tissue. You hear slogans that sound so very good. In a society in which we emphasize freedom and the right to choose and to be masters of our own destiny, the pro-choice slogans. The one thing you can point out is what you are choosing between. You are choosing between life for an unborn child or death for an unborn child. And that puts that choice into a clear perspective. We, of course, never want to say that no one has a choice, but inform them as to what those choices are. And when that takes place, both from the pulpit and in private counseling, or in Bible classes, or perhaps even in premarital counseling as you come to the topic of family planning, contraception, and the matter of planning a family, that can sometimes be mentioned. And sometimes you'll find an interest in that, and other times you won't. It just depends on what circumstances there are. If in your congregation you have any family life seminars, this, again, is another appropriate time to bring forth these issues. Always doing it in a matter of factuality and letting the person make their own choice. There is the area of theology and the area of physical and medical facts that, as Dr. Nathanson pointed out, have become more and more clear as science has advanced in recent years. The slogans, as I mentioned before, are a very important aspect. I've devoted several sermons to covering various slogans. It's just about impossible to cover them all in one sermon. And so in various years on Right to Life Sunday, we've examined a number of those slogans. A book by Jean Garten, Who Broke the Baby, is especially good in pointing out the fallacies of so many slogans. In regards to the civil rights nature of abortion, this can be mentioned from the pulpit also. 4th of July is a good time to bring this up. The issue of slavery, when Lincoln was president, was very much a civil rights issue. People had been convinced that Negroes were not a person. And so the Supreme Court in the Dred Scott decision declared that they were not a legal person, not entitled to any rights or any protection under the law. Does that sound familiar? In the 1973 Supreme Court decision. Almost exactly 100 years later, the same thing is said about another group of citizens, the unborn child. They were declared to be non-persons, entitled to no rights, no legal protection under the law. And so what had once been the safest place of sanctuary for an unborn child now became what has been called a free fire zone, a place of death. And that child was granted no protection until it was removed from the womb. Once that child is born, it is entitled to full protection under the law. To kill it, to injure it, brings a person under the penalty of the law. But before it is born, even up until the ninth month, until the very moment that that child is born, it can still be, through legal and actual means, by agreement of the mother and the physician, that child can still be put to death. And yet if it can only be born the night before, it is safe and protected. Many people do not realize that abortion can take place right up until the very moment of birth. That shocks people. Also, if they can be shown the size of the little unborn child, 12 weeks is a common time of abortion. They don't realize that it already has individual hands, that it has individual fingers, that it has individually formed footprints, and that it has the ability to move and to react to pain. When people know the facts on all issues, then they certainly can be convinced that abortion is indeed wrong, not only in the eyes of God, but it should be wrong also in the eyes of each human being. United States, we say that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But so often the pursuit of happiness for a few moments or a few hours leads to a removal of the right to life of an individual. And this is where, as you know from theology, that one wrong often leads to another. The wrong of premarital sex or the wrong of adultery often leads a person to commit another sin, that the sin of abortion. Unfortunately, we no longer can say that technically abortion is murder. It is legal. It is approved. Even though in God's eyes it is murder, in the eyes of the law of the land, it is now a legal procedure. And that's another one of those misnomers. It's a procedure. It's a means of accomplishing something that really brings about death. As you consider various ways to approach this from the pulpit, the ways in which I've mentioned the legal aspects, the moral aspects, the medical aspects, and the theological aspects, each can combine together to provide an overwhelming sense of duty for those who are listening to you. The next step is to provide some action for them. One, of course, is in writing to their legislators, to their representatives. Another, which was accomplished in a town about 35 miles from my hometown, is dealing with the hospital. The hospital board there made an unprecedented decision to disallow the procedure of abortion in its hospital, except for those rare cases where the mother's life is in danger. And through medical science now, that almost never takes place. But a doctor began working. Various members of the community began sending petitions. And preceding that event, the nurses and other medical people, in conscience, refused to participate in abortions. And so several months prior to that time, there were no people working in obstetrics who were willing to participate in such an abortion. And so the doctors who did them were forced to bring in nurses from their own clinic to do the procedures. Well, a pro-life doctor took up the cause, and he and others succeeded in having the board pass a policy in which those procedures would no longer be allowed. They did it not on religious grounds, because a community hospital could hardly operate with that policy, but they did it because they felt it was inconsistent with the whole philosophy of the hospital itself. The purpose of the hospital is to save lives. And that procedure, they said, is contrary. It takes away life. And that brings up one other point, namely that that life has already begun in that unborn child. Theologians have, for centuries, discussed when the soul enters the body. In that sense, it really doesn't matter. That is not significant when we are deciding whether or not to have an abortion. Some may feel one way and others another way, and that varies throughout the spectrum of Christianity or even non-Christians. But life, and science shows this, that life is there from the moment of conception. It's simply a matter of how developed it is and how much it is enabled to take care of itself. So the right to life, we believe, certainly is there because it is God who, you know, who not only kills, but God who makes alive. God who brings about that miracle of birth. Indeed, the more you study the procedure, the more amazing it is that conception can take place at all. God indeed provides us with the miracle of life. And so as you prepare your sermons, you will begin to notice, if you are attuned to it, various times in which you have an opportunity to bring up very legitimate, down-to-earth, human, everyday issues. One of these is the right to life, in all of its spectrums, not just that of abortion. In your educational programs, again, there are youth groups, there are topics for ladies' study groups, there are topics available from Lutherans for Life, from Concordia Publishing House, from the LWML and their quarterlies. All of these together make a very good arsenal in sharing with others that message that God has given us, that life. And coupled then with political activities, letter writing activities, the church, the congregation, the individuals can be organized into giving a witness to the community. One final thing would be that that one day you will have the opportunity, perhaps, to save a life personally. A couple of months ago, as I was preparing to go to a meeting, I received a phone call from a woman at the hospital whose daughter was going to have an abortion. She said, "Can you come over and talk to her?" And she was crying and upset, said she doesn't want to talk to me about it, but I hope that she will talk to you. And originally when she called, she asked if I could simply come over because of an urgent matter. I said, "Well, I'm going to be going out of town in about 25 minutes. Can it wait till tomorrow morning?" And so then she explained the nature of the situation and that tomorrow morning was the day when her daughter was coming to St. Louis for the abortion. So I said, "I won't be able to stay real long, but I will come and I will talk to her." So I went and talked with her, and sure enough, there were several reasons or excuses that she had, which are very familiar. The first was financial. The second was she wanted that child to be a wanted child. The father was married, and not to her, and he was pressuring her into getting an abortion. She felt that it was the best solution at this time, and of course, with the abortion scheduled for the next morning, there literally wasn't much time. But I did share with her, from a medical point of view and from several other reasonings, why, for physical reasons, she need not get that abortion. I told her there were people who believed that that child was alive and that they would be able to help her financially in order to preserve that life, in order that perhaps could be put up for adoption. Also that whether or not she wanted that child or whether the father wanted the child, there were many people who I know personally even, as well as many people throughout the county or the state, who would literally give anything to have a child of their own. And that child certainly is wanted by someone. And as we talked and discussed various other reasons and aspects, she suddenly said, "I don't know what I'm doing. I don't even believe in abortion." And I thought, aha, well, there's a chance after all. And so I encouraged her not to rush into anything. I said, "I'm going to have to be going in a few minutes, but I want to leave that decision up to you." As I told her right from the beginning, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You have to make that decision yourself. Consider all of these facts. And so I encouraged her to pray about it, to consider it, to talk with her folks more about it, and to postpone that appointment for at least a week. So there's no rush to do it. If after all the considerations you decide that you still want an abortion, you can always have it done next week. It won't be any trouble to get another appointment. But at least don't rush into it, because once it's done, It can't be changed. That life will be lost. So I went to the meeting and was out of town, got back late that night, and the next morning I was wondering, and while I was gone during the day, a woman called my wife and said to tell me that her daughter wasn't going to do the thing that she had planned to do. So when I got home, that really made my day. And the girl is experiencing a little depression, just as is not unusual with anyone who is pregnant. And besides that, she has lost contact with her boyfriend, so that adds another trial to the situation. But she is doing pretty well under the circumstances, and she is very much pleased with her decision. And so I share that with you simply to say, you never know when the opportunity will come to give a witness of the feelings and of the facts and of the belief that is within you. And there, as I point out, let me emphasize, there are many, many fronts on which you can confront the abortion issue. There's a good answer for every excuse that they have. I don't know if you have any time for questions or want to do that.
If you've got some more time, what I think I'd like to do is go ahead and we've got some material to cover, and then if you can stay for a little longer, then
okay.
Tell some questions.
Okay, sure. Be glad to.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
When you came in the door, there's a brochure that was handed out with a staple in it. We're going to be looking at this for just a second, in just a minute. But before we cover that, something needs to be made explicit here. Maybe it's obvious, but the fact is there are lives here in the seminary community that are touched by abortion, and I think it's extremely important that whenever we talk about it, we have to say that we do not address abortion from the vantage point of our own righteousness. We don't condemn other people as sinners being free from that ourselves. Just so that point is explicit, that we don't talk about abortion as a right, but as a responsibility to the Word of God. The other thing is, one of the important things also that we need to keep in the forefront of our minds when we think in terms of dealing with the abortion issue is learning to regard ourselves as baptized people. So often, I think we dismiss ourselves as being people who can respond to an issue because we think, I'm not a social activist. Somebody else can do that. And because we don't feel like we're experienced. We don't have experience in that area. We're not qualified or whatever. But because we're baptized people, we are given an experience that we inherit an experience that is not ours, Jesus' death and resurrection. And if we can think of ourselves in those terms as something newly created by God, not limited by our own experience, we are much freer to see needs that arise and then address them. Not because we've done it before, not because we're social activists, but because there is a need that we can address. So having said that, okay. I'd like to address four main areas. And folks, I will keep this short. I realize everybody's got responsibilities, okay? Four main areas. Pro-life in one's person, in the congregation, which is really going to be the heart of what we have to share tonight, and then we'll really look at the resources, in the circuit and in the community, okay? In one's person. First of all, well, this sounds a matter of fact. I mean, we all know this, but we have got to take hold of God's promises for ourselves. Any negative situation with which we are faced, if the Word of God is addressed to it, God can break it and bless it and make it a blessing for us and for other people. We have got to believe that about ourselves. If we believe that a negative, what we perceive as being a negative or an unexpected situation in our life, can be used by God to further His glory, He can redeem that. It's freeing. And if we believe that, we can tell that to somebody else. We can tell that to an expectant mother that has an unexpected pregnancy, or somebody who doesn't want that child. We can with conviction say, God can take this situation and He can bless you through it. Whether she keeps the baby or whether she gives it away, somehow God can address that situation and make it and redeem it when His word is spoken to that. The other thing is in one, talking about now how we can be pro-life in one's person, believing God's promises, and being consistently pro-life. I was speaking with Pastor Brusius, who's out at the Synod headquarters. He's in charge of both the parish services, parish services and family education, something. Anyway, he had addressed a clergy for life convention, all these pastors that were together pro-life, okay? And he said, how many of you have ever counseled a woman considering an abortion? And not one hand went up. The irony is that even though we are all pro-life, if we are not pro-life in our person, people will not come to us for help. If they don't see us as somebody who cares, will take the time to communicate, they're not going to come to us for help. Dr. Shen, who is a pediatrician here in St. Louis, who has written a book on pediatrics and is extremely involved in the pro-life movement, said that pastors have to be at pains to let people see them not as an authority figure, but as a Christ figure, somebody who is there as their advocate. So as simple and as maybe as that might sound, we've got to take the time to look at ourselves and say, how do we communicate with people? Do we communicate care to them? Can they be vulnerable around us, or will we laugh at them? Do they perceive us as somebody who will ridicule them? So in very peripheral areas, we have got to, and not just as relates to the abortion issue, but certainly as relates to the abortion issue, we've got to be pro-life, pro-caring in the way we relate with other people. Finally, Pastor Dorsch said an important thing about the vocabulary that we use. What's happening now, I've seen several articles lately where people are saying you're either pro-woman or you're pro-fetus. And that kind of language is just a distortion of the truth. Pro-life is pro-woman and it is pro-child. And for people to say, if you're pro-fetus, you're not pro-woman, that's just simply a lie. And we've got to be very careful about the language that we use, that we do refer to the unborn child as an unborn child and not just a fetus. I'm medically granted it's a fetus. I mean, that's a stage in human development. But that it is a child, and that we not let our vocabulary, that we let our vocabulary communicate the truth. And that we are not anti-choice. We are pro-choice because we are pro-life. We're pro the choice that that child has or will have one day. You can really tell I'm on a rampage, huh? But the vocabulary is important. Okay, in one person, we've talked a little bit about that. In the congregation, obviously, and there's just some areas here that have already been touched on, but I'd just like to review them again. In the pulpit, in organizing, in congregational structure, in the curriculum for education in the parish, and in counseling, okay? In the pulpit, obviously, one-way communication can be extremely unfair. We've got to be extremely pastoral with the way we deal with the issue. You can just bet that lives that we're speaking to when we preach have been touched by abortion. I know I sat through one sermon once. A guy was anti-abortion, and boy, I feel for any woman who had ever had an abortion in that congregation. I'm not saying that what she did was right or justifying that, but nobody would have gone to that pastor afterwards to talk to him or to communicate a problem that they had. And Pastor Brusius, again out at the Synod headquarters, he said we've got to be careful not to pontificate because one-way communication can be so unfair. But if we do address it from the pulpit, then people know it can educate them, okay, they can learn something, and also they know that it's something that's within our frame of reference. They know that we know about abortion, and they can come to talk to us. So it's got to be addressed, but very, very pastorally. Now, there's a heart of anything that I'd like to share with you tonight. It's in the congregational structure, what we can do pro-life in the congregation, okay? One thing Clergy for Life has suggested is that each congregation appoint a person called the refuge person or a resource person. And this is something that I think, wow, as vicars and especially as graduates, we can really begin to say, hey, this is something we can do. Locate a person in the parish who has strong pro-life feelings, okay? And give that person some responsibilities. Those would include giving them the responsibility for locating local pro-life agencies, finding out what's available in the community, for one thing. If you look at the resource, on the back page of the stapled thing, of the stapled sheet, the inside of the back page, there's just a few resources that are very important for this. Where it says resource people and places, do you see that inside the back page? Okay. The second and the third entries in the first column, the Christian Action Council and the Crisis Pregnancy Center. You may know we have a Crisis Pregnancy Center over here. Crisis pregnancy centers are largely Protestant-oriented pregnancy. They deal with unwanted pregnancies, okay? Women go to them for testing. You may be familiar, I read an article in the school paper last October about the Crisis Pregnancy Center. It is a dynamite place. Women's lives are changed there. They have doctors who will give free medical care to the child for 2 years. They have hospitals that will provide free beds for the mother. They have their hands on social resources in the community that you can refer the mother to, WIC program and stuff like that. They have homes where women whose parents want them to have the abortion, homes where the women can go live, okay? Now, earlier they shared about a home that's being started out in, I was talking at the time, I think it's St. Charles. But anyway, Crisis Pregnancy Centers, it's becoming a nationwide network that we can really plug into. What I would like to suggest is that when we go out on Vicarage, or even here, well, we know everyone is in St. Louis, but when you go out on Vicarage or with a call, write the Christian Action Council, that's the second address. They're the people in charge of that. They will not, I was back in Washington over spring break, and I asked them for a list so we could distribute the list here on campus. They wouldn't give me one. They said, the pastor has to write and request the information. So please, when you get where you're going, write the Christian Action Council and say, is there a crisis pregnancy center in my area? And then if there is, you've got your hand on a resource. If there is not, and you want, and the need is there, they will send you a whole packet of information. They have some really nice, a community survey. What to find out what's available in the community that can facilitate caring for women, social agencies and other stuff. Then they also have a manual on forming a crisis pregnancy center. I think we've got to be thinking in those terms. If there's not something there, maybe we can be the ones to get the ball rolling. Plug for the Christian Action Council and the Crisis Pregnancy Center. We'll look at some more of these further on down. The third from the bottom in the same column, Lutherans for Life, they're now starting a series of crisis pregnancy centers or something similar to that. They've got one going now at the University of Minnesota. Also, for local contacts that your resource person could check into, near the bottom of the second column, Salvation Army, they will oftentimes provide help for women. Your local Catholic Archdiocese, the Catholics have been involved in the pro-life movement for some time. Every one of them has a pro-life committee. If you get in contact with that, they can refer you to some other agencies. I mean, they're a good resource to use. And finally, you can contact local counselors and doctors. Have this person call a doctor and find out, are you pro-life or not? And if they're not, let people know about it. If they are, let people know about it. We can really, on a local level, begin to inspect the community and find out what's there, what isn't there. It's kind of matter of fact, but I think we don't think of ourselves as people who can do this. Dr. Lindsay, who is in charge of Board for Social Services, Social Ministry out at Synod headquarters, said, okay, besides locating the local pro-life agencies, just also this person can just explore the local situation. Contact the health department, find out how many abortions have been conducted in the community in the last year, or whatever, what the statistics are. Call the doctors, we've already mentioned that. Call the local board of directors at the hospital and find out what is their policy on abortion. And if you find out, they advocate abortion, then get on the phone and call Dr. Lindsay and say, these people are pro-abortion, is there something I can do? He's more than willing to talk. Dr. Bruzius, again out at Synod headquarters, said what he's done is he's gone to his kids' school counselors and asked them, if my child gets pregnant, what are you going to counsel them? And he's not antagonistic, but he's finding out what they're going to do. And he's telling them, don't do that if that's what you're going to do. You know, this is my child, and I'm responsible for their moral development. But that's the kind of exploration that we can be doing. Also, this person in the congregation or a committee, whatever it is, can start getting a handle on these national organizations. Again, if you look back at this list, the National Right to Life Committee will put out, they've got a list of all the pro-life agencies that have been formed in the United States. What I intend on doing is simply sitting down and writing all of these places and finding out, okay, what information can you share with me? What's near my area? Okay? And also this person or this committee can kind of assume a lobbyist stance. Again, that's kind of a social activist type approach. So that's really what we've got to be. Talking with Dr. Shen again, he said how important state lobbying can be. About 10 years ago, he initiated a child abuse law. He and a committee of doctors that he knew, they formed a committee, and they wrote a proposal for child abuse legislation, and they got it pushed through Missouri, the legislature here in Missouri, and it became a precedent law that a lot of other states started adopting, okay? I mean, so local stuff can become very important. To find out how to lobby or what to lobby for, what people will need to do is the fourth one down, the National Right to Life Committee. Write them and find out where's the headquarters for our state Citizens for Life. Okay, all 50 states have a Citizens for Life Committee. I'm sure you're familiar with them. I mean you've heard of them. But if you don't know where it's at, you can write the National Right to Life Committee and find out. And then get put on the mailing list of the local Citizens for Life and find out, okay, what legislation can we lobby for? And that person can just simply assume that as a responsibility. Once a month, write off a letter or something, or whenever it's appropriate. Obviously, national lobbying is important. That's something else Dr. Shen said that a lot of times people think, well, it doesn't really make a difference, when it does make a difference. And you can really begin to, I mean, they do count the letters people write. You'll also notice on the back of the same page that we're looking at, there's kind of a guideline for lobbying. I'll let you just look at that. We don't need to cover that right now. But it is significant. People need to know. I'm not trying to be... Well, anyway, I went back to Washington in February just to find out what's going on and what can we do. And I met with some staff people from my senators. I'm from Idaho. And I met with my representative back there. And it surprised him totally that there were Lutherans who were pro-life. He thought all Lutherans were pro-abortion. I said, wait a minute. No. You know, and... So sometimes we can inform them things that they don't know. Okay, and also in terms of lobbying. Further on down, there's a name there, Candace Mueller. LCMS has recently appointed her to be a resource person in Washington, D.C. She has her finger on legislation that's being adopted, not just pro-life legislation, but some other ones. Write her and find out, is there something that we can be doing? Okay? I hope I don't sound kind of condescending, saying, okay, now do this. I don't mean to communicate that at all, but there are things that we can be doing. We need to be able to perceive ourselves as effectors of change. A personal thing that I have started doing is when I see an article that's pro-abortion, I will, I've got two rough drafts of letters that I haven't even mailed them off yet, okay? But in the Lutheran magazine, and the LCA magazine last year, there was a real pro-abortion article. And it was enough to make you sick. I mean, I won't get into that. But also the most recent Lutheran Campus Ministry magazine for the Lutheran ministries, you know, around the United States, they had a pro-abortion article. And I intend to write that, the author of that one, and say, look, you know, without being antagonistic, what about this, what about this, what about this, and please give me your answers. Well, now, whether the letter gets stuck in the garbage, I don't know. But I know it's helped me clarify my thinking. It's helped me figure out where the people are coming from. And it just might affect some change. Okay, having said that about the resource person, just that there are things that resource people can be doing in the local congregation. In the church curriculum, okay, there are the obvious education means that we've got. We've got films, we've got some pro-life literature, you can have your bulletin inserts and stuff like that. But one thing that is extremely important, and both Pastor Brusius and Dr. Lindsay said the same thing, that we have got to start looking at sex education in the parish. Rather than sort of letting it just sort of go unaddressed, start incorporating sex education into the parish. And the best way to do that is to start teaching parents so that they can teach their children. You're probably aware of the fact that Synod has put out a new series of 6 books for sex education. Really a good series. What Pastor Brusius, who edited this series, suggested doing is taking the 6th book in the series, Sexuality, God's Precious Gift to Parents and Children, and using it as an adult education course. What it does, it goes through and it tells parents what they already know, but it lets them, it gives them greater ease in talking about sexuality. Because obviously, I mean, it's oftentimes a difficult thing for people to talk about. His suggestion is that let the adults become more comfortable talking about it. And then what this book does, it goes back to the earlier books in the series, and it explains sexual development in children growing up so that parents can understand their children better, so that they can just feel more at ease about, you know, answering the children's questions. And it's got real specific, you know, what if this happens? What do you do? What if a child says this? What do you say? Yeah, you know, it's got some real good stuff. So this is something for curriculum that I think is really important, again, especially as graduates, that we can plan on incorporating into the curriculum of the congregation. Another thing that was really recommended by Dr. Brusius is a study on ethics, just helping people clarify that Christian ethics, we operate with a different definition than what the world operates with. Freedom for us is not just doing what you want to do. Freedom is learning how to live and love with responsibility and care and nurture and seeing ourselves in that way. Well, I will spell you that speech on ethics, but in counseling in the local parish, it's not likely that women will come to the pastor. It's unusual that Pastor Dorsch, I think, got that, and I'm thankful for that. But what Pastor Brusius said is probably your best chance is to do preventive counseling. For premarital counseling, Synod has a really good resource out now. It's a video resource. It costs about $60, but it's good for 9 couples. It's a video series with packets that 9 couples can use in premarital counseling. And it facilitates their discussion about sexuality and helps them plan for that down the future, in the future with children. So preventive counseling is largely available. Think in terms of informing other people in our circuit, what resources we have discovered, what we might be able to do corporately in terms of sponsoring an agency or seeing that something gets started. Maybe that's obvious, but if we're aware of that possibility. And in the community, we've already talked about lobbying. I guess that's really the big thing. But also exploring the possibility of starting an agency, of being somebody who would do that. What we hope to do, especially for first-year students, I don't know how many first-year students are here, but we would like to see a committee of people here on campus formed that would, there's a lot of things we could do. We could start gathering more pro-life resources and then maybe sponsoring lobby days or something. We're from all of the United States here. We could, cover half the Senate and the House of Representatives with letters lobbying for certain bills if we wanted to. So, having said all that, there's a quote that I read once about Martin Luther, and he said, "The hardest thing for a pastor to learn to do is when he's finished saying what he has to say is stop talking." So I will stop talking. No. Just in today's Wall Street Journal, there was an article, and it's really interesting, that pro-lifers are starting to have an effect in the United States. The number of abortions has declined slightly in the last year. That's not necessarily due to pro-life efforts. It's due to some other things, too. But the fact is, legislators are starting to feel the pressure that's on. They know that pro-lifers will not let go of that issue and that they're going to be pushing for it. One other thing I was going to share in terms of lobbying for local issues. One thing that's being supported now in the state of Texas and in 6 other states that didn't identify them, some states are trying to pass legislation now that if you're going to have an abortion, the unborn child has to be anesthetized before the abortion. And that's really a potent statement about that life, okay? And it's those kinds of things. Even though they're not directly, they don't get rid of abortion, they have an impact on abortions. And another thing that Dr. Shen said, he said, you don't always know when you're lobbying that this is the absolute right bill to be pushing for. Because who knows how it's going to be interpreted or whatever, but he says we have to keep plugging away and keep chipping away. And finally, God is the one who's going to have to bring it to pass. The one point that the Wall Street Journal article said that I think is a fitting closing note is that the one thing that the pro-abortionists have not reckoned with is that this is an issue that pro-lifers will not let die. So if we keep up the battle, I think we can really see some significant change. And in terms of our world, too, this is just one more thing. The United States is really quite conservative in our approach on abortion, believe it or not. A lot of nations far surpass our abortion rate. It's just awesome. And if we can become a statement to the world, abortion is wrong, who knows what influence we might wield in the world. So, now I'm done talking. God bless us, everyone. Pastor Dorsch, if you want to stay for field questions with Pastor Dorsch, please feel welcome to. Otherwise, thank you for coming. We appreciate it, and God bless.